to the Student Press Law Center podcast for September 2009, a monthly rundown of news about legal developments affecting the student media. The Student Press Law Center is an advocate for student voices. We recognize the essential role that free speech and a free press play in a democratic society, and the SPLC is committed to nurturing and protecting those freedoms for the next generation. For more information about the center's work, go to www.splc.org. I'm Frank Lomonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. Thank you for joining us. At the Student Press Law Center, we encourage student journalists to be watchdogs over the conduct of school and college officials by using open records and open meetings laws to pry open the secrets that schools would rather keep concealed. We are always on the lookout for exemplary reporting about campus issues, and it's hard to find a more impactful example than what our guests on today's podcast have published this past year in the Chicago Tribune. Tara Malone, Stacey St. Clair, and Jody Cohen are the reporting team that has spent a good bit of this past year scrutinizing the admissions system at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, a large public institution with over 31,000 students located about halfway between Chicago and Indianapolis in central Illinois. What they found was a system in which VIPs, including members of the college's board of trustees, were able to get their favorite candidates placed on a preferential admissions list where they were admitted ahead of those with superior qualifications. As a result of the Tribune team's disclosures, the governor of Illinois called for the resignation of the entire 9-member board of trustees of the university, and so far, 7 of the 9 have voluntarily stepped down. On September 14th, the Tribune reported that both the leadership of the university's faculty senate and the student leadership came out in favor of replacing the university's chancellor and president as part of a house cleaning to give the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign a fresh start. Well, we have with us today the reporters who worked on that series, Tara, Stacey, and Jody. Why don't you first each introduce yourselves, starting with Tara, and just tell us how long you've been with the paper and what you cover there.
Sure thing. Well, thank you very much for having us on today. My name, obviously, is Tara Malone. I have been with the Tribune for about 2 years, and I tend to focus mostly on K-12 reporting issues. So education, but not so much higher ed.
And Stacey?
And I'm Stacey St. Clair. I'm a general assignment reporter for the Tribune, and I've been here about 2 years and two as well.
And I'm Jody Cohen. I cover higher education for the Chicago Tribune, and I have been at the newspaper for 6 years.
Terrific. Well, somebody start us off. Describe how the idea for this series of stories first came about. Did it originate with a tip from an insider or a hunch? And then walk us a little bit through how it developed as you started looking into it.
This is Jody speaking. The idea for the story came about from a tip that mirrored some information I already had, and I was able to use the information in the tip to file some open records requests with the University of Illinois. I asked for, in my original request in April, I asked for all records documenting communication by University of Illinois trustees about student applicants to the campus. I also asked for all communication. This included memos, emails, phone calls, handwritten notes, and other correspondence that documented involvement by Illinois legislators in regards to admissions. And initially, we got about 1,800 pages of documents, largely copies of emails. A lot of the documentation we had was email documentation, as well as the lists, the different, we call them clout lists, that were kept by the university to document which students should get preferential treatment.
So I'm guessing that you didn't immediately get complete and full compliance with every single thing you asked for. So can you talk a little bit about what were some of the obstacles that you encountered in requesting open records?
Sure. It took a while until we would get documents every couple days or every couple weeks. In the end, we probably ended up with about 9,000 documents. The university later found documents. In fact, some of the more troubling documents, a month or 2 months after the first set of documents. So some of the documents trickled out. We did not get them all at once. And also, the documents redacted a lot of information. We They, in addition to student names, which were redacted for privacy reasons, they also redacted grades, so we did not know the grades, how low the grades were for students who were accepted through the CLOUT system. They redacted other information that we are now fighting for in court. The Tribune did file a lawsuit to get some of that information unredacted.
It sounds like, though, you have been able to confirm, maybe through working sources, that there were people who wouldn't have otherwise been up to the university's academic standards who did get admitted through, as you say, a clout list, through the string pulling of some influential insider. So talk about how were you able to confirm that with the records being redacted?
Well, the email communication included discussions where admissions officials would say that the student was weak, or the student wouldn't get admitted, or they were being forced to admit a student. We also were able, through sources and other reporting, to figure out who some of the students were. And in nearly every case, they were connected. Either they were a relative of a trustee, or they were the relative of a political donor. So these weren't just, students, just random students.
And the university, this is Tara Malone, the university also had a system for essentially ranking students, applicants, on a 1 through 5 system. And 5 meant that you were kind of destined for a denial. And there were numerous instances through the documentation that really showed just how many 5s in the end were admitted after there had been an intervention on the part of a powerful patron.
Do you have any information about whether this is a practice that's limited to Illinois Urbana-Champaign, or is there reason to think that this is maybe a common practice that goes on at other schools around the country?
Well, this is Stacy. That's actually one of the defenses that some university personnel have floated, the idea that, this happens everywhere and there's nothing unique, but that's actually not true. What makes this unique is the fact that it's such a formalized, well-oiled system, and that's something both we found in our reporting and that a state panel found in their own investigation.
Well, Stacey, you just mentioned the state investigation, so mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what has been the fallout from this? Obviously, we mentioned the resignation of a number of the trustees members. What has been the fallout after these disclosures?
Well, as you said, the entire Board of Trustees has been overhauled. The Urbana-Champaign Chancellor and the University System President both received no confidence votes yesterday, and also the school says they're going to revamp the way they do admissions and put a halt to this this practice.
They say they're going to have the toughest firewall in the country, that they will there will not be undue influence in admissions or external. They will not succumb to external pressure in the future. They also, the university did not have a publicized appeal system in the past. They didn't. There was no way, if you were denied, to know that you could submit an appeal. But if you knew somebody, and you sort of with a wink, they would say, "Well, send in an appeal," and that was one way students who were in this preferential system had an advantage, is that they would get. Their applications would get a second read after they were denied. And now the university is saying they are going to open up appeals to everyone.
Well, as we all know from reading about your former governor, Blagojevich, Illinois is sort of perennially in the news for political corruption and for misuse of political influence. Was it a surprise to find that there was this kind of pulling of strings that goes on even inside of a university, which people consider to be sort of an ivory tower of academic merit?
I think the answer to that is probably yes and no. Like, yes, you do have this expectation that, academia is sacred and things don't get tainted as easily. But then, again, we're all reporters who work in Illinois and Chicago. So we also know the realities of clout and the role that clout plays in our system here. But I would say for the most part, we were, at least I was, surprised just how blatant the favoritism and the clouding was for some of these students.
Well, we talked about what the response was from the state government and from the governor's office, but talk a little bit about what the response to your series has been from the reading public, the alumni, the students. Has there been a lot of blowback from people protective of the school who feel like they're being picked on?
I'll tackle that one. This is Tara speaking. There has been, I will say that the tenor, I guess, of the response changed a little bit. Initially, I think there was a tremendous amount of outrage and questions, and did this affect my child? Will this affect my child? Questions like that. And there also, I will say, was a tremendous number of readers who really wrote to us and said, this is why I still subscribe to newspapers. So that was kind of affirming in and of itself. But as it went on, I think, and the investigation, particularly the state investigation, really deepened. There were some people, both within the university community itself, graduates, what have you, who were protective of the U of I's reputation and felt that this entire process really sullied it. And, you know, there are some folks who look at that and said, well, it was the fact that there was, you know, these admissions abuses occurring, that's what caused the black eye, if you will. And then there were others who felt like it was the reporting and the revelation of that maybe cast a pall over the university. So it was mixed, but I would say by and large, there certainly was a tremendous amount of reader feedback. It struck a chord.
Yeah, well, you mentioned some response from some readers basically saying, this is the kind of journalism that I still buy newspapers for. Talk a little bit about the commitment of resources that went into this. You mentioned the thousands and thousands of documents, mm-hmm. and clearly the three of you are putting a lot of your time into it. You know, what was the commitment of resources on the part of the Tribune, and is that still going on today?
Oh, it was tremendous. I mean, from the copy desk to our managing editors who stayed just late nights along with us, the graphic artists, the photographers. I mean, there really was kind of a top-down and a bottom-up, I think, commitment to this project. And that has carried us through the summer. And that continues as our reporting continues.
And I think we've shown the Tribune, this is Jody, I think the Tribune has shown a real commitment to this story, too, in its decision to file the lawsuit for documents.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Tribune's legal team has been on top of this from the beginning. We've filed 5 FOIA appeals to date. We're still trying to get documents that are being withheld. And there's been huge support from all corners of the Tribune for this.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the grounds for which the documents that you're fighting over are being withheld? Are these all being withheld under a claim of student privacy, or what are the grounds that you're fighting over?
There are all kinds of grounds. There are student privacy grounds. There are we have one FOIA appeal that was denied where we asked for results of a poll that the university did of its alumni to gauge how to shape their message and their response to the scandal, the admissions scandal, and they denied that on legal work product grounds because the polling firm was hired through the legal firm. So we're appealing that. We've appealed for student names once we realized how key the actual student names were to the people who ended up on the clout list, and that's being denied for privacy.
Well, in the time that we have left, I would really like to hear from all of you on sort of lessons learned and tips that you might have if a college student journalist is listening to this and is reviewing your work in the Tribune and is thinking, gee, there might be a story like this in my community or something similar to it. How do you get started on an investigation and a project of this nature, and what are some of the things that you maybe need to keep in mind?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, it starts with a really sound FOIA like the one Jody submitted to U of I. And then I think the second part is really to get, you know, a good team. We benefited from having an outstanding team around us. All three of us made this commitment to kind of, you know, see this story through. And I think it's taken a lot longer and taken a lot more turns than any of us expected. But you know, that was essential.
And I think also, too, it helps as well, and we, you know, Stacey and I think kind of benefited from all of Jody's legwork, frankly, in being the beat reporter on this? I mean, you to have kind of established sources and really be familiar with the terrain that you're mining. I mean, that's an integral step, I would say.
And students know their university better than anyone. So
exactly.
Student journalists, if the students working on their school newspapers have sources, cultivate sources on the faculty and the administration and the student body, and don't be shy about filing open records requests.
Well, given the opportunity now to look back, and I know it's just a few months ago in May that the principal initial part of the series got published, were there things that you learned from the experience where, maybe you would have phrased a request differently, presented it to a different person, handled it in a different way? Any lessons learned if you were going to start today knowing what you know now?
I don't know. This isn't really something we could control, but it would have been better if we had all the documents at once instead of having them trickle out over time. But that wasn't something in our control.
And more broadly, it's the point of just be prepared to see it through. You know, I don't think this kind of work and these kind of revelations come out without some pretty dogged legwork. And knowing that, you will have to ask and ask and ask and ask again, but there's value, tremendous value in doing so.
Yeah. Well, just as a last question, that figure that you threw out of, I think, 9,000 pages of documents, that may be a very intimidating amount for somebody who doesn't have the resources of the Chicago Tribune. Just how did you go about the information management and the paperwork management of a project with that enormity of information to go through?
You know, it actually is the way we did it is a lot simpler than what it sounds when you have 9,000 pages. We invested in some, color sticky tabs that you can get at Office Depot or Office Max, and we assigned different colors. Different colors meant different things, and we would sit with each other and divide up the emails and kind of say, okay, well, here's an interesting email about a student who wanted to go into aviation and couldn't get in, and then 20 minutes later, Jody or Tara would say, okay, well, I have the response to that email for the student, because the emails weren't in coherent strings. They were kind of all muddled up. So basically, we just sat and read. And, if you know how to read an email, you know how to read these documents, which I thought was the beauty of the story, because it was so easy to understand.
And the students will have an advantage, too, because they know the players who are in the emails, the people who are copied on the emails. I guess another tip or a piece of advice would be to try to talk to just as many people as possible in doing the reporting, with the admissions, talking to the lower level admissions people, all the way up to the chancellor and the president to get the biggest picture. But 9,000 documents sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, and we had a dedicated office space for it. And when you look at all the paper, it is a lot. But if you just sit down and get through it and read it, it is manageable.
Well, thank you so much, Jody Cohen, Stacy St. Clair, and Tara Malone of the Chicago Tribune. That is some wonderful practical advice and some really, really inspiring journalistic work. Thanks for being on the podcast, and thanks for your continuing outstanding work on this developing story. And thanks to all of you who are listening to the Student Press Law Center podcast for September 2009. We encourage you to check out the news and reference materials on the SPLC website at www.splc.org. Become a fan of the Student Press Law Center on Facebook and follow SPLC_org on Twitter. And if you're a student journalist or you're a journalism educator with any question about your legal rights, call our hotline, 703-807-1904, or email us at splc@splc.org. Thanks for listening.